Friends, the first speaker has already pointed out why we have taken the subject of Gita, message of Gita today. It's a Hindu festival, not exclusive to Hindu, but universal appeal. It has universal appeal. Therefore, students all over the world and Hindus all over the world will be celebrating Gita Jayanti on the 4th of September. According to Bhagavata Purana, according to Bhagavata Purana, it is said that Krishna, the peerless teacher and guru, was born on the midnight of the 8th night of Krishna Paksha, of the dark 4th night in the month of Shravana, in the city of Mathura, bringing with him the supernal light of truth and knowledge to dispel the darkness of ignorance of the masses. And therefore students all over the world will be celebrating it in different manner, in different style. Such religious great festivals and great days are only reminders to us of the secret inner spiritual life. It's an inner way. What's important is, on during all these occasions, what do we do? External, but not internal. That's important. And the quality of our worship will depend upon the nature of the inner reality that we have realized. Many people will celebrate it according to their own custom, tradition, fasting, feasting. Some will worship in one manner, the other people will worship in another manner. But do we ever realize that when you celebrate such great days, especially Krishna Jayanti, is it not necessary for us or incumbent on us to come as nearer to Krishna as possible through our resolve, the intense feeling and inspiration to take birth, the child of Krishna in us? It refers to spiritual rebirth. So unless we wake up on this great day to realize that we should take the step to find out how we can make this tabernacle a living tool for Kshetrajna to shine through. Therefore, it's the first lesson to be taught, to be learned in this particular message of the Gita, is that it is the first spiritual rebirth. As the poet points out, that whatever you celebrate Krishna Jayanti year after year, if the child Krishna is not born in you, before we proceed to find out how various types of people worship Krishna or celebrate Krishna Jayanti, we will see what Gita itself represents. According to Bhagavata Purana, Krishna, Gita represents the crown and the culmination of Mahabharata. It's not only religious, philosophical, mystical, historical, ethical, but above all, for a student, a seeker of truth, an intuitive student, there is a secret doctrine, a sort of, you know. It is considered as the fifth Veda, in fact, as was pointed out by the first speaker, along with Brahma Sutras and Upanishads. This was considered as Prastantraya, that is, three important primal treatises, which are the basis for the foundation for Vedanta. Therefore, what happens is Gita is such, and Gita is enshrined within the 700 chapters, 700 just verses, the whole gist of life. And as one German philosopher and Sanskrit scholar points out, right, in one of his Tibetan lectures, he says, Gita, Bhagavad Gita, is the imperishable significance. The people who are interested in the inner spiritual life. And then, see, these 700 verses, if a person, young seeker, is able to try to understand the words, not only the words, in between the lines, he will see the secret doctrine of the wisdom of religion. Now, You see, unfortunately, one of our elder statesmen had to say this, and Theosophy refutes that. The statesman philosopher says, Radhakrishnan, in his essays in the Gita, that Bhagavad Gita is the more religious classic than a philosophical treatise. It is not an esoteric work designed for and understood by, especially the initiated. Unfortunately, notwithstanding what he says, Theosophy refutes this. And he suggests, especially points out, that we have to read the Gita with the spirit of the spiritual lamp. As he assures us, we have it in our handout. To study the Bhagavad Gita by the light of the spiritual lamp, be it small or great, which the Supreme Self will reveal and increase within us if we attend to these behests, diligently inquire after it. This is important for us. With what motive are we reading the Bhagavad Gita? What intent do we have? Do we awaken the spiritual lamp within us to guide us? And it also talks about the disclosed Veda, undisclosed Veda. It says there is the highest authority because people used to stop short of Shankaracharya commentaries, not beyond that. Although thousands of commentaries have been written and translations have been made in various languages. It says here, there is the highest authority for reading this poem between the lines. The Vedas themselves say that what we see of them is only the disclosed Veda. And that one should strive to get above this disclosed world. It is here clearly implied that the undisclosed Vedas must be hidden or contained in that which is apparent to the outer senses. The spirit is the undisclosed Veda which must be looked for between the lines. Therefore, how do we study the Gita? Many people, as was pointed out by the first speaker again, you see, they know the 700-odd verses by rote. They can repeat it all the time. But what way? Have we understood what it means to each and every one of us? That it means, yes, every time we think about Krishna, the Krishna has been born in us. In what way? You see, in fact, we have to see how the various aspects of Krishna represented the Bhagavad Gita. If you see, actually, the first quotation in your handout, this will give you a hint. This is from the secret doctrine. The Logos being no personality, but the universal principle, please note that, universal principle is represented by all the divine powers born of the mind. All the Manasaputras are nothing but aspect of this. The pure flames are, as they are, called in occultism, the intellectual breaths, idea breaths. Those angels who are said to have made themselves independent, that is, passed from the passive, the quiescent, into the active state of self-consciousness. That is, from the unmanifest to the manifested player. As Krishna only says, the same words being repeated later by another vehicle of the Logos, and the same to all beings. There's one light shining in all, although you can count millions of lights. Those who worship me, the sixth principle, or the intellectual divine soul, Buddhi, made conscious by its union with its higher faculties of Manas, Manas conjoined with Buddhi, are in me and I am in them. When this is recognized, the true meaning of Krishna becomes comprehensible. Has it become comprehensible? Therefore, Krishna represents various aspects. I mean, we can count probably 7 or 8 or more than that. Absolute deity. Because Logos is, after all, in one sense, an emanation of that absolute deity. I mean, in one sense. But although it will be philosophically absurd to say it's an emanation. But it is also the rootless root, the unknowable. Of all that was, that is, that shall be. Which manifests itself with one life, independent of matter. And then it is also, yes, the very basis of everything in the universe. the very source of Manasa Putras, of Manasa Putras, where derived, where emanations of universal mind are Mahat. And then it is, he is also an avatara, the divine avatara who periodically comes down on earth, descends on earth, not only to preach mankind, teach mankind same old Brahma Vidya, Yoga Shastra, but also to protect the wise and destroy the wicked. Such is the divine avatara, he is called Purna Avatara, the very logoic consciousness. He represents the logos itself, we have told. And then also he is the guru of gurus, Yogeshwara. And he is also the guru or divine instructor of Arjuna. Arjuna was wise enough to choose him as his Parthasarathi, as his charioteer. And then he is also the very spiritual essence that energizes every atom to life. These are various aspects. When we say the absolute deity, then there are two aspects there. And the 10th chapter of the Gita, the last verse we have, you say after giving Arjuna all the devotees, he said, oh, what avail all this knowledge to you? These are only by way example. I establish whole universe with a single portion of myself and it remains separate. There is a transcendental aspect which is absolute. And the immanent aspect is the deity, the immanent, the divine presence everywhere. Then what do we learn from these various aspects? In fact, is there anything to learn? You see there are four or five items which you have to learn. First one is, if Krishna is everywhere, divine presence, he must be here. Therefore we should recognize that the soul, we have the soul and the ego, the divine ego within us, enshrined in a physical body. This is what is important here. See, there are two things necessary for any manifestation, kshetra and kshetra. That is, indweller and the deity. We have that in the very first chapter, we have come to that later. Now, what happens? This is the first thing. Then, if Krishna is everywhere in us also, then we should look within to get educated with tremendous, self-effort to find out so that we can learn from him if he was the guru or this divine instructor of Arjuna. Arjuna and Ara. And according to Vedanta Subbarao, he represents human monad undergoing evolution. We are all human beings. Naras, undergoing evolution. Therefore, this Nara does not represent only the Arjuna, but each and every individual undergoing evolution. Therefore, if you have to learn from Krishna, we have to take him as a guru or our divine instructor. Therefore, we should lend a listening ear to the voice of Krishna within. But unfortunately, our ears are attuned only to the maddening voice of the streets and the cities. Unfortunately, Glad of the Path says, the voice of the Master is all the time there. But are we able to use Master? Are we able to listen to it? Therefore, the whole point is, and the other lesson is that we have to undergo or pass through a stage called Sarvegyanis. Each and every individual has to pass through, especially a disciple, undertaking the discipline of a sadhaka in order to become immortal at puja. This is there. The surveying of the army is one of the most important things. And then for this, what happens? See, the problem is that unfortunately we have to, the kshetrajna has to act through a blind matter, the body. And the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita clearly says, when spirit is invested with matter, it partakes of the qualities of the prakriti. Then what happens is, this spirit of man, or the divine ego, or a human ego, is embodied in the body, therefore is temporarily imprisoned by the matter. And it represents the blind body in terms of Dhritarashtra. And see, the sovereign spirit or the divine ego cannot function. It is imprisoned. It has become a slave to matter. And who governs that? The 100 castes of desire of the personality governs it. And in terms of Mahabharata, what happens is, therefore, the higher ego has been banished. And I mean, this is the interpretation of the very key verse. Therefore, what happens is, that very opening verse gives us the keynote, the entire understanding of Gita. He says, what is the Dhritarashtra, the blind matter, representing the body, asks his charioteer, Sanjaya, see, what is my army? And Pandavas are doing. See, he received a dichotomy. See, look here, what happens is, see, as was pointed out during Friday meeting, the Maya is a faculty of perception in the ego, in any ego. Who thinks it is separate from the units, Venus or that absolute ego? Any ego who thinks that he is separate from the Venus is, yes, governed by this Maya. His ego perception, that's what it says. Transaction. Points are clear. Then what has happened? What else can be there? Of the blind matter. Therefore, as long as you have this dichotomy in your mind, that, you see, I am sure, is there, mine and thine, can you understand the significance of Krishna being the absolute deity, being everywhere? The first lesson that is taught by the Bhagavad Gita is, yes, there is one spirit which shines in all beings. And there is unity. And therefore it talks about selflessness. Then of course we'll come to that. It also advises us to perform action, right action. Without any interest in the results, or without any attachment to any of the results, niskamika. Now, therefore what happens is this being caught in this blind matter, you see, then he has to fight. The fight is in the mind. And then what, there's a story, before the war starts, both Duryodhana and Arjuna went to see Krishna, to seek his help. Unfortunately, what happened is Krishna was sleeping, and Duryodhana arrived there, and he sat near the head of Krishna. And a little later, Arjuna entered. He sat at his feet. As soon as Krishna woke up, he saw only Arjuna, and asked him, what do you want? Then Duryodhana said, I have came first. But he said, knowing full well these people have come for his help, he said, I've got only two things. One me and the other my arms. Immediately Duryodhana asked, what else can be done? 100 cards of desire only can increase his own desires and arms. Therefore he said, I want your arm. And Arjuna was so happy that he said, I want you as my child. He was wise enough to select the Bhagavan or the Krishna who is everywhere in the divine presence as his guru or a charioteer. And yet what happened? After entering into the battle, that's why he says, I want to survey the army. Senior, Udiyor, Madhye, Meta, Vaktam, Stapaya, Vachita. Please, place this chariot in the two arms. Then what he says? I have to kill my grandsire, Kitan, kill my cousins. How can I have a kingdom like this after killing all these people? I don't want anything. I don't want to see, kill them. What is happening to you? He was so wise to choose Krishna as a charioteer and guru, yet what failed him? This is a very important thing. Even if you try to make resolve, a little resolve, so many obstacles will come. Here, a disciple who is going to, yes, become immortal at Vijaya, and who is going to, in the sense that he is going to make himself a vehicle for Krishna to play. What happened? Suddenly, this whole thing, he gets rejected. Of course, nowadays the doctors will give you product, 10 milligrams or 20 milligrams, depending upon the cases. But that is not the case. So all these kandaic elements, the low basic things, yes, become a powerful entity and prevent him from going forward. Had he known, he had known that beforehand that is it. Or he has got to fight his own grandsire, Bhishma, Vishnu Pitamaha, and other people there, cousins. But yet, his own Acharya, Dronacharya. And what happened? Suddenly, these comes and prevent. Even if you try to come to Theosophy, how many opposition have been there? Not only from your friends, but your own family. It requires a tremendous guts and feeling, perseverance to overcome all this. Likewise here, the chela has to face all these difficulties. And therefore, it's argues. For nearly 3-4 pages, he argues. Finally, he throws the bows and arrows and then looks upon Krishna, says, Krishna, I look upon you as my guru. Please instruct me clearly what I should do. Then Krishna, the divine, compassionate Lord, he says, beautiful translation, this judge's translation. Krishna tenderly smiled. It's what it says, tenderly smiled. How compassionate he is. He knows not hatred at this thing, path. That's what later on one of the verses says. Now what happens is here, after saying that, he said, you are only talking like a pragyan, like a pundit, a philosopher. Then he gives him one of the highest metaphysics in the second chapter itself, saying that, you see, there is non-existence for that which does not exist. And there is no non-existence for that which exists all the time. Therefore, there is that which exists. What is that? Divine presence everywhere. What is that that changes, keeps on changing? Our form, our body, the matter, which enshrines you, of course, which embodies the whole divine soul. Therefore, this we have to understand, therefore, that the soul is embodied in a body which is made of matter. Therefore, it is for us to govern the body through the higher self. Now, having seen this, then we will know that he takes him through the first chapters through various schools of philosophy. And from the 7th chapter to the 12th chapter, he gives him the highest metaphysics. The 7th chapter is a magnificent chapter. Coupled, you see, I will give you the kind of a knowledge that coupled with the realization, there is nothing else to be known, says Sri Krishna. Starting the 7th chapter. And then, see, he carries in 12th chapter and then Vishwarupa Darshana and all. Finally, in the last 6 chapters, gives him the practical advice. Now, if we go through the various aspects of the Krishna that is being worshipped by various people, you will see. What do the intellectual, how do they worship Krishna? The intellectual worship Krishna as they find him as a divine instructor of Arjuna. Therefore, they think that he is a divine instructor, that's the end of it. But do they really realize that it also means that he should become a divine instructor for each and every one of us? Doesn't it call for us to be more careful to see that we make this tabernacle a willing, alive and tool in the hands of Parthasara, the Krishnamurti, so that we can carry out the behests of the higher self in us. This requires prapatti, total surrender to the Lord within. Are we prepared? This is the whole thing. Unfortunately, we don't realize that the divine guru is within us. We are looking all the time for a guru outside of us. How can you find a guru outside if you can't recognize the master here? The greatest master within each and every one of us. And see, Krishna also points out that he represents the very higher self. And according to Mr. Judge, the higher self is the only truest and the best friend for man. Therefore, having here the great master, we are looking all the time for outside. Do we realize that the soul of ours is rooted in the one divine presence? So look, somebody. Quotations we will see, you will understand. See, the two aspects of personality and individuality are brought out beautifully by St. Paul. It is written that Abraham had two sons. The one by bondmaid, that is the personality. And the other by the free woman. That's Hindu duality. I mean, the same thing comes in the esoteric character, good gospels. But he who was a born woman was born after the flesh. But he of the free woman was by promise, which things are alien. Unfortunately, misinterpreted by Christian saints and all. This is an allegory representing the personality and the individuality. And the eternal war that goes on all the time between the living and the dead. Between matter and spirit. And in one of the, during the third race, there should be various views how the third race was and all that. Then he points out this war between spirit and matter, between the living and the dead, will last. Till the inner and divine man adjusts his outer terrestrial self for his own spiritual nature. But who is going to attempt this? The Narada man has to attempt this. Subduing his selfishness and conquering his selfishness, etc. Then he has to purify his mind in order to allow this Krishna to play. Till then the dark and fierce passion of the former will be at eternal feud with his master, the divine man. Then later on he goes on to say, finally, yes, the divine man will win. Now, see, if you see some of the verses from the Gita itself, they point out. You see, avatma gudakesaha sarva bhuteshu sitaha, that is, the 10th chapter, he says, I am the ego seated in the hearts of all beings. I am the beginning, the middle and the end. If he is seated in the hearts of all beings, is it one self or several selves? We have oftentimes quoted from Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 120. The teacher asked the disciple, do you see one light or 100 lights? He says, one light you see. Is it different from the others? No, it's the same. That Ishvara, the Krishna is seated in the hearts of all beings, talks about the one self shining in all things, although it may not shine forth equally. Then he says, again from the 9th chapter, the wise gifted with spiritual wisdom worship me. Their very hearts and minds are in me, enlightening one another and constantly speaking of me, they are full of enjoyment and satisfaction. Even talking about Krishna and his various things is satisfying. The wise, at least they must awaken that spiritual Krishna within them. To them, thus always devoted to me, who worship me with love, I give the mental devotion by which they come to me. For them do I out of my compassion. The compassion has put a love. His compassion incarnate. Standing within their hearts, destroy the darkness which springs from ignorance by the brilliant lack of spiritual discernment. Then, he also goes on to say, and mystic syllable womb, Rig, Samar, Yajur, and all the Vedas, and the goal, the comforter, and the Lord, the wisdom and resting place, and asylum, and a friend. Who will say that? He is everything. Provided you recognize that Krishna and take refuge in him. Yoga Chemam Vahamyam, that also comes here. For those who are thinking of me as identical with all, that means you should be able to see the unity of things. Constantly worship me, I bear the burden of responsibility for happiness. Unfortunately, our LIC has taken over the same logo. Yoga Chemam Vahamyam, what are you doing? When the claim is put, it will take years to give the money. Look at this, they are going to take care of our business. See. And then, in the 18th chapter, the 13th also is there. The spirit in the body is called Maheshwara. The great Lord, constantly worshipping and great Lord, the spectator, the admonisher, the sustainer, the enjoyer, Pudrishtva Anantascha Bhakta Bhokta Maheshwara, enjoyer and also Paramatma, the highest soul. Did you ever realize? The one reality functions at various levels. The one reality functions at various levels. The source, the yes, admonisher, the enjoyer, and Paramatma. Then the last verse from the 18th chapter. There dwelleth in the heart of every creature, O Arjuna, the Master Ishwar, who by his magic power causeth all things and creatures to revolve, mounted upon the wheel of universal wheel of time. Take sanctuary with him alone. He is not there in Birla Mandir, please. He is here in the heart of each and every one. Take sanctuary with him, O son of Bharata, with all his soul. By his grace thou shalt obtain supreme happiness, the eternal place. Then, and then Krishna himself points out how to acquire this wisdom. Not only with purification, not only with pure motive, but also performing our actions with right motive, without any interest, selfish interest, or without any anticipation of results. This comes. Then, yes, he says, seek this wisdom by doing service, by strong search, by questions, by humility, the wise who see the tree, fruit will communicate it to you. This is assurance given by Krishna. Jnanati dandaha, the fire of spiritual knowledge can burn all doubts into ashes. Fourth chapter. Krishna sevaya upatekshitite jnanam nanana tattva darshanam. That means, when you do this with first of all questions, service, humility, all these things are essential for a jailer to learn. Once you understand, yes, we are rooted in this very Krishna, this divine presence itself, are we able to understand that we should become, yes, not only a slave to Krishna within by surrendering ourselves, so that we can act as the self, through the self, by the self. Parityaj, sarvadharmān parityajya māmekam saranam vraja. It comes in the 18th chapter. What does it mean? It means you become the self. You act as a self, for the self, the self. How will you do it? This is what it means. For some other people, he is looked upon as an avatar, divine avatar. But what does it mean? A person, a great deity, and a logoic consciousness, periodically descends on earth in order to not only teach mankind but to protect the wise, to destroy the wicked. Yes, yes, that is why it is called this Yoga Shastra and also Brahmagupta. Krishna is supposed to be Yogeshwara, Yogi of Yogis. Then, the large mass of mankind, how do they look upon Krishna? See, unfortunately, their minds are enshrined with the idea that according to what is given in pictures, your pictures, or what is given in Bhagavata Purana, they look upon Krishna as a handsome youth, playing at the flute, under the, sitting under the shade of a tree, where a cow comes and licks his boot, and where his divine music is played in the flute, the song of life eternal, the song of infinite, not only enthralls, but enchants all the gopis. But do we ever realize it's a song eternal? The song of life itself. Are we able to attune our heart and mind with that flute? See, in fact, you see, one of the commentators have said, we should make this itself into a nice flute so that Kshetrajna can play with that. There are seven cards. Each one can play with the cards, whether it's going to be a catkin or a silver one. We have to determine through our ideation. Is it not necessary for us, therefore, to resolve with our ideation and even a feeling to seek the Krishna within? To allow the Krishna to see, take birth here. Therefore, the primary lesson of Gita is, yes, it refers to spiritual rebirth. The spiritual rebirth can only take place when as it happened to Krishna, although Siddha Pratijna was standing in front of him, he couldn't understand Krishna. Because he was thinking, yes, Krishna was there. This is the Maya. Therefore, when he realizes in the 18th chapter what is given there as the mystery, most secret, Mukhyam Mukhyataram Mukhyatama, says Sri Krishna. Then he says, yes, that's true, no more. He realizes that, see, I am Krishna, and Krishna is myself. See, that duality is gone. Therefore, my delusion is destroyed. I am recollected once more. That means it's in memory. That he is very Krishna. There is no more than duality, but only just single unity in his mind. Therefore, he says, yes. Now, I will do according to your will. The priest, he is prepared to act as a self for the self through the self. Earlier, Krishna has told him that act according to thy will. Thy choice. Because ultimately, it's man's highest authority is himself, not outside of us. We have to decide what we have to do, what kind of a thing. Krishna can point out the way, which we who walk the path. Therefore, in one of the lessons that Gita teaches us, yes, the relationship between the Supreme Self, the Deity itself, and man. What is the relationship? That's both at one. Man is the microcosm of the great macrocosm. Come here for specific purpose to, as a human monad, to gain true evolution, to reach perfection through identifying himself, emerging himself with the Krishna. We have a few minutes left for questions.
So, I have a question. So, how do we live the
song
of life practically in our own life?
How do we?
Practically in our own life, how to get into action, the path of knowledge, action, and focus in our life.
I only hinted at that, you see, it is through purification of your mind and thoughts, and then realizing it is that in the body is nothing but a prison for the indweller. Therefore, we have controlled the body by purification of thoughts with right motive and perform action. You must perform action. Without any selfish interest in that action. See, do you realize that you are one and all the people the same? Or are they different? As long as you have in your mind the idea of duality, mine and thine, you can never understand the Gita. In fact, you see, the earlier antecedent verse, very last of one page we have, Bhagavad Gita tends to impress upon the individual two things. It's indicated by this judge. First, selflessness. See, why did the Dhritarashtra talk like that then? Mine and thine. And it's a blind matter. What else can you expect? And the spirit is, yes, imprisoned within. There's selflessness. First, and the second, action. The studying of and living by it will arouse. Please note, this is the thing. Studying and living by it will arouse the belief that there is but one spirit, not several. See, because in each and everyone's heart, the ego is there, divine Krishna. It's not only in your heart, but it's everywhere. You see, even in a miniature. See, this is the problem. You see, we don't understand. See, how does a sage look at things? A Brahmin, a cow, a dog, a Milesha. He won't identify this a cow, this is a Milesha, this fellow is a Brahmin. No, he sees the Brahman everywhere. That's the kind of elevation of my mind and perception should be there. As long as you function in the plane of duality, you will never understand. He says that we are spirit, not sovereign. And that we cannot live for ourselves alone, because then we are all one. But must come to realize that there is no such thing as separateness.
and no possibility of escaping from the collective karma of the race. The problem is we don't understand. We keep repeating the same question and again. How do you mean? It's given clearly. Go to the third chapter, go to the fourth chapter. Parasparam bhavayanta, the third chapter says. That is mutually nourishing each other, but we are only fighting with each other. If somebody does something, you want to take credit or push him over. This is what we are doing. Are we able to realize that we are our brother's keeper? See, as long as we have this, yes, we function with the ground of this mind and heaven, we can never understand spiritual philosophy. This is our thing. Unless you are convinced, yes, there is a brotherhood. How do you get convinced of brotherhood? Because we are all one. Emanations in one reality. Functioning in different bodies, appearing as divided. But we are essentially one in our higher nature. Yes, the corporeal body is so strong, therefore we feel we are different. No. That is where the HPP scores. Maya is a part of the perceptive faculty, the ego, who thinks it's different from others. See, that separate tendency because of Maya in us means only perception, not elsewhere. But it is for us to understand the Gita. You see, the very first chapter will do. And the second chapter also, the beautiful Siddha Pritya stage is given. Go through that, ideate on that. Then you will realize how we have to behave. Even if we make part and parcel of our own principle, the very 1,000th of what is given there, that's enough. I thought almost time is over. If there is anything short question, we'll take up. It's a very large question. You see, what does Krishna's army represent? See, it's simple like this. See, it's all numbers of so many soldiers, this and that. Because what else can the matter, blind matter, and the 100 cards of desire, he wants to increase numbers. He feels that with increased army he can conquer everything. Whereas, Pandavas, or represented by Arjuna, has the divine presence within him. See, the notes in the Bhagavad Gita, the third chapter, if I remember, you see, there are two things involved. One general will of nature, another one side, black adults. On the right side, there are white adults. The peace, ultimately we say, the truth alone will prevail. How? The white adults will have the same power as the black adults. But the white adults will have plus point of general will of nature also. Therefore, if you have the divine presence within you, and with that strength if you go along, like the past says, that the warrior within you fight is incapable of defeat. Who is that warrior? Krishna. Therefore, if you think it's a person that is going to fight, it's no good. Unless you have the faith in that supreme self within you, you won't be able to win. See, therefore it is that. That is what Arjuna chose. And the time is up. Please take this leaflet with you and try to go through these various quotations and then ideate on that. Then you will realize, yes, at least as we celebrate Krishna Jayanti, let us take one step towards spiritual rebirth.